This is episode 474. Have you heard of the Blue Zones? The five areas on Earth where more people live to 100 years old and beyond than anywhere else. In fact, there was recently a documentary on Netflix called Live to 100, Secrets of the Blue Zones, where they primarily promote a plant-based, limited vegetarian or vegan diet as the major contributor to why these people live so long. But what if that's actually not true at all? Like, not even close to the truth? And that someone actually owns the Blue Zones? That's right, I said own. Can anyone own Blue Zones? Did someone buy the Blue Zones? And furthermore, what is Blue Zone accreditation and how much does that cost annually to have? And who gets that $6 million every year? So, today's episode is a deep dive into the corruption of the food industry and the smear campaign against having fat in our diet and animal protein in our diet. The hate campaign against steak, basically. This is a movement that's funded by giant corporations that have a vested interest in subtly transitioning as many people as they can away from eating animals altogether. The Blue Zones aren't all you thought they were. And on today's episode, we speak with a medical and nutrition corruption researcher to unpack where the Blue Zone story is leading us astray. So, let's get into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Today on the podcast, we have Belinda, myself, and our mission, which is that this year we're supporting 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean dealing with what's really weighing you down and not just the number on the scales. So if you want to stop yo-yo dieting without ever having to have a single conversation about calories, reach out via the show notes or the caption down below or our website, of course, and you can chat with us about our programs. Okay, so we have the return of this wonderful woman, Belinda Fetke. And in case you don't know Belinda, she is the wife of famous low-carb Australian doctor and surgeon Gary Fetke. Their story is amazing. They both went up in court against some pretty powerful medical authorities in Australia, fighting for the right to genuinely help people with their health, and they won. And that is a very tiny summation of the entire story. But we touched on a little bit of it in my first chat with Belinda on episode 207, which we just figured out was a couple of years ago now, where we talked about the one particular religion that has helped shape nutrition science and legislation in the USA and Australia and much of the Western world in a direction when it comes to health and nutrition and medicine that doesn't really promote optimal human health. And so when you're done here, scroll back to episode 207. There's lots of delicious, interesting stuff back there. But today we're unraveling another interesting topic, which, just like cereal for breakfast being a bit of a ingrained myth in our society, that's what healthy people should do. This new conversation is also something that's deeply embedded in our beliefs about health and, as you can probably guess, might not be the whole truth. So here to crack open a can of worms with me is Belinda. So good to have you back. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Maddie. It's nice to be back. And I actually can't believe it's 4 years. So yay, we're back.
Oh my God. So much has happened in that time for both of us and the whole world, I guess. Yeah. So, but I'm curious, like, before we get into sort of the nuts and bolts of today's topic, how is your career just in general as a truth teller and a corruption exposer? How is that journey going and how has it been?
I think I didn't get overwhelmed, but I think there was just so much information I was uncovering and trying to share. Thank you for helping me raise my voice in this space. As you said, Gary was the only medical doctor in the world silenced from talking about nutrition back in 2016. And like, why? How can a medical regulator stop someone from talking about best practice? It was just ridiculous. And we didn't actually go to court because, would you believe, the APRA bylaws forbid us from going to court. We had no legal representation. We had to fight the entire thing ourselves. And the only way we could clear Gary's name was to go to the National Health Ombudsman. And that took another 2.5 years to use that. She could only talk about the process, so not the actual determination, but the process. And we finally were able to prove that the process was flawed. And that's how Gary's name was cleared. It's just such a tangled web. And if it hadn't been for that, though, I'd never have done my deep dives into where we're going to go today. And as I said to you earlier, when I heard the Blue Zones Netflix documentary come out, How to Live to 100, it just suddenly sparked all my desire to keep going and keep being noisy. And so I've gradually worked up and worked up. I have so much information over the last 10 years, Maddie, and most of it's in my head or on paper. Not a lot of it's out in the atmosphere yet. But I think when I heard about the Blue Zones, it became this meeting place of ancestral diets, of who decides what we eat, when we eat, and why. That's what I've been going on about for a very long time. And this influence of the Seventh-day Adventist Church on our dietary guidelines, on what we consider to be healthy and unhealthy, it really connects to this demonization of animal protein and fats. And it was just like fireworks went off in my head and I said, I'm back. So, yeah, this is where we're going. And I think it's just a really important messaging, because when Gary was in trouble with the medical board, when he first got reported by dietitians, he was just talking about reducing sugar and processed food, processed carbohydrates. But we hadn't actually considered the fact that he was treading on toes he didn't even know were there, because he was actually promoting animal protein and fats. And you're like, well, why not? It doesn't matter to me whether you believe in the Bible and Genesis and what happened back then and where we've moved to today. You can't deny that our biology, our anatomy lends us to be able to eat animal protein and fats. Like, we do so much better when we eat the herbivore. And I'm not anti-religion. I'm not anti-vegan or vegetarianism. I think as I've delved into this space over the last 10 years, I've found people can hold their beliefs, but they can't hold the facts. And I'm not stopping them from holding those beliefs. But when those beliefs impact me, impact my husband for being silenced, but impact the health of people to be able to choose to include animal proteins and fats in their diet, that's when I think we need to it's just about discussing transparency, I guess, about where these guidelines have come from and who decides what we eat, when we eat, and why.
Yeah, it's interesting as you were saying that. I was thinking, and I was actually considering putting an Instagram post up about this, but whenever we're told something about health, nutrition from someone that we believe to be an authority, whether it's a doctor or whether it's the back of a cereal box or the places that people get this information, people generally absorb it without question. But the second that you or I come along with something that disagrees, people all of a sudden, everyone becomes a research scientist and they're like, show me the proof and show me the studies. And then you pile up a stack of books and studies, thousands of studies or thousands of pages of books, and they still, and it's like you were saying, they still can't hold the facts and most often won't even dive into that information.
No.
They're just vehemently against it because of this belief.
A belief. And that belief can be influenced by vested interests and financial interests. It can be influenced by religious ideology. And I hadn't considered that. So when the medical board, the expert witness who was brought in to determine if Gary could talk about reducing sugar, bad man, I thought at first, I tried writing to him everywhere. It was really interesting. I found his email address and I wrote to every single one of them. I said, please just have a discussion with Gary. I think you'd be surprised. He was the emeritus professor in the Southeast Asia Pacific region in nutrition. He was a doctor, but he specialized in dietetics. And you just think, how can someone not just, as I say, go back to the biochemistry, biology, pathophysiology, like everything that we think about how we nourish ourselves. And so I wrote to this man, and after he didn't reply to anything, he really pissed me off. And so I thought, right, he must work for the sugar industry. And as I did more and more research and delved into more and more places, I found he worked for Sanitarium. Mm. And in my head, I was going, oh, well, that makes sense. Gary's talking about reducing sugar and processed carbs and, okay, cereal. And just slowly it started to dawn on me, it's owned by a church. What are the church's beliefs? And hence a decade-long research deep dive into all sorts of places, but a lot of other religious beliefs as well, into dietary rules and regulations. And I can appreciate that a lot of people hold these very close and very dear to their heart. So that's why I'm saying you're most welcome to hold your belief. But if the facts don't support it, I don't also have to hold that belief.
Yeah, I think we're very much in a time of all sorts of trigger button topics, that of people projecting their beliefs onto other people in the face of blatant, obvious yes. biological fact. And like we can obviously, there's about 10 rabbit holes there we could go down. But I guess getting to the sort of meat and potatoes of these blue zones, mm-hmm. which is, and you mentioned the church and even this concept of blue zones has sort of become this almost religious doctrine in wellness circles, or at least even from the public perception now that Netflix documentary has come out, that people should be living their lives in a certain way in accordance with people in blue zones. And it seems you can't mention longevity or speak to a vegan without someone bringing up Sardinian shepherds.
Yeah, who only ate plants. Maybe they only ate plants.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like, why were they looking after animals, right? But you've suggested, and we've both sort of suggested so far, that there's something not right about what we're being sold on the whole longevity movement. So take the floor, unpack this for us.
Unpack it. Well, I guess I started looking into this space in Gary asked me to make him a Blue Zones map for one of his talks in about 2014 because he was seeing it from the lens of these people have ancestral diets and mm-hmm. didn't think about where other people were also taking this map and offering a different messaging. So I made this map, and when I was doing it, I thought, oh, I'll just look up and see different things. And I don't know if you've heard of Sally Fallon Morrell, but she was part of the Weston A. Price Foundation. She founded the chapter, and Weston A. Price was a dentist back in the 1930s. And he determined, he was looking at his practice and seeing patients who were developing smaller and smaller jaws. There was a real huge amount of dental caries happening. And he was just astounded. He was staggered. And he just thought, what is happening in our diet in America right now in the 1930s that is causing this diminishing jaw? We can't even fit people's wisdom teeth in anymore. So he set off to find areas that potentially had beautiful jaws and were eating ancestral diets, because this was his hypothesis. And he came across, mm-hmm. he acknowledged 14 different spaces around the world, like the Inuit in Alaska, through to groups in the South Pacific on the islands. He went all sorts of places, and these 14 communities who had the most diverse diet, not really anyone overlapped with all the other things. But these people, the thing that they didn't have was Western food. They didn't have highly processed white sugar, white flour. They were not eating processed food that the Westerners were starting to get from the industrialized move. And when he tested these foods that they were eating, he discovered that even though they were very different sources, the things that they had in common were vitamin A, D, and K2, like these essential fatty acids. All of them had it. And 10 times the amount that he was working out that the people that he was looking after in America at that time were having. So a very large amount. This has to be a key trigger of wellness and bone structure. So he went off and did a lot of work in this, and Sally Fallon Morrell has done a fantastic job. She wrote a book called Nourishing Traditions. So I did a lot of reading about ancestral diets back then, and I thought, oh, this just makes so much sense. It really does. And then I was going, well, why is the Blue Zone saying plant-based, plant-based, plant-based? And, like, mm-hmm. and then, of course, in 2016, I think, they brought out their Power 9, the Blue Zones. So they'd already started doing makeovers. So we'll jump back. Sorry, I've run away. So in 1999, a doctor, Giovanni Pess, got in touch with a demographer, Michelle Pooler, and they were looking specifically at a group of people they found to be having exceptionally long-lived lives and well in this very, very small place up in Sardinia. And as they were drawing the area of this longevity with a blue highlighter pen, the blue zone revealed itself. It was 2,000 meters above sea level. And so my deep dive over the last year has really looked at the historical aspects of why these people came to be where they came to be, their diets, and then why are we getting different messaging? So, yeah, looking at in particular to start with was Sardinia. And as you've mentioned, these people were isolated, self-sustaining groups. I think you'll find Sardinia, Ikaria, Nicoya, and Okinawa. So they're the four original ones. Well, there's five, but I'll come to the fifth one. So these four original ones, most of them, the oldest olds that they discovered were not highly educated. And I'm not saying they're not incredibly intelligent, but they just didn't have the opportunity to go on to secondary education and university and whatever else, because they were needed by their community to help resource their community. So if they went away, they didn't come back. So we're talking about people who are very community orientated as well. And especially in Sardinia, up in Ogliastra, which is one of the areas that they highlighted, 65% of the land was communally owned. You know how we talk these days about, oh, let's do a community kitchen garden so people can go and access this. Well, this is 65% of the land. So this is including animals. This is including goats. This is including pigs. This is including everything. So the poorest of the poor were looked after in this community. And so when you look at the Power Nine, there's lots of other reasons, not just diet, but it's the diet that they've mucked up along the line when they've socially engineered it at the end, which I'll come to. But if you go back to that original group, they had very close community. They were well supported. Let's say they looked after themselves, but the diet included animal protein and fats. And to say it didn't just is such a, it's so confusing to us. And it's as if someone who's poor and uneducated living in Sardinia, who's in his 90s or 100s, is going to fly out to America and say, that's not what we eat. So it's pretty easy to market something that you want to market. Yeah.
Well, and just quickly too, yeah. It goes on the point that we made before, which is like Sardinian shepherds are always referenced. It's like, what animals were they herding? Why were they herding animals?
Well, Dan Butner in his original book, he says he went into a house and Mura's house smelled vaguely of sausages and he never thought to ask Mura, does he eat these sausages? This fatty sausage made of meat?
Yeah. Shock.
Shock. So Sardinia, we've got that. Now, Sardinia is the home of the Sarda pig. Mm-hmm. They make cheese. You cannot tell me Sardinians do not do those things. Interestingly, the oldest olds in Sardinia actually didn't spend a lot of time down on the coastal plains, didn't spend a lot of time down low because of war and things. They were pushed up into this central area. So the indigenous people went up and the invaders took over the land below. They took all the coast. So there wasn't a lot of fish in this particular group's diet. I'm not saying Sardinians don't eat fish, but I'm talking about in particular these oldest olds.
Yeah.
And so then Dan Butner apparently had been hearing about Okinawa as having potentially exceptional longevity. They'd been doing an Okinawan centenarian study since the 70s. Mm-hmm. So he pitched Quest to National Geographic to ask if he could go and find out what the secret to longevity was. And he got funding in 2004. He went over to Okinawa. In 2005, he had the front cover of National Geographic, Blue Zone's Secret to Longevity. So again, Okinawa, there was something like 100,000 pigs on the island of Okinawa before World War II. It was the bloodiest Pacific battle. Right there, they were fighting. Japanese and the Americans were fighting because they wanted access to China. They destroyed 93% of the buildings on Okinawa. They destroyed their crops. Like it was decimated and over 100,000. So one third of Okinawans were killed in the campaign. So 100,000 pigs, you can't tell me they didn't eat them.
A lot of pigs.
Down to 800 after the war. Mm-hmm. So the Americans felt bad because they destroyed their crops. They destroyed so much. Interestingly, in 1949, the American government did a survey to find out how these people were coping, and they made notes in the documents that they had that there was very little food there to allow anyone to become obese. It was destroyed. The thing that did survive was sweet potato, and it was underground, and they had, I think, three typhoons come through not long after the war as well, which also created havoc. But these sweet potato were pretty safe where they were. And so in 1949, when they asked people what they were eating, is it any wonder they were eating sweet potato for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which is the messaging we're still getting now. That's what they eat. But my question is, was that from that 1949 survey that was done, which was referenced. So the Americans introduced Spam to Okinawa because they felt so bad that they'd taken all their pigs away. And even now, I think 72 million cans of Spam per year is eaten in Okinawa.
Wow, you will never hear that in the documentary. Oh, my God. Yeah,
you do not hear that in the documentary, do you? And if you go to the restaurants in Okinawa, they actually make it like a sushi with the Spam in the middle. It's a delicacy in the restaurants. So they are eating pork. Spam is made from pork. It's canned pork. They eat pork. Okinawa is the only Asian country, I believe, that actually drinks dairy. Most Asians don't. I don't know if you've heard that, you know, their stomachs apparently aren't geared to it and whatever else. But Okinawa were desperate. They had goats. Mm-hmm. They had goats and they drank goat milk. And I think Dan Butner sort of gets around it by saying, well, there's no cows in Sardinia and the High Peaks and there's no cows in Okinawa, but goat and sheep milk is dairy. Oh, yeah. That's awkward.
It's an inconvenient fact.
It's an inconvenient fact. So, yes, they ate that. So now we jump over, okay, Dan Butner's done Okinawa and then he talked about Sardinia in this original Blue Zone. And the other one, which I think, how do you sell an ancestral diet that pigs are a very important part of both of the diets in both of those two countries? How do you sell this longevity pill to America, to Americans who fear saturated fat? Because in the 2000s, they'd already had the McGovern report. Saturated fat was a no-no. And we're not talking about meat.
My cholesterol numbers.
Cholesterol. They can't be having lard. You get 20 litres of lard from a pig. That is to feed a community and it's shelf-stable. They don't even need to refrigerate it. Like that was a stable for cooking their vegetables, for cooking other things. It was just part of life and it was inexpensive. 20 litres went a long way to providing food for these people. And in Okinawa, they eat the entire pig, like the head, everything's a delicacy. Mm-hmm. And I also point out, this is because these people couldn't afford not to eat every part of the animal. There was no choice. Yeah. This was nutrients. And economically, it made sense to eat every part of it.
And you don't need to go far to find any community on the planet that once upon a time ate the whole animal.
Yes.
Right? And even if we just do basic maths, it's like, okay, so these animals have one liver and one brain and they've got hundreds of kilos of muscle meat. Mm. So it's like, it's weird how we've got the value of a steak being so high and to purchase, yet the liver is just like rubbish and cheap, yet it's nutritionally, it's so much better for you.
Yes, absolutely. So how did Dan Butner sell this longevity pill to America, Maddie? How do you think he did it?
Well, he had to remove all the scary elements that cause cholesterol and heart disease, according to the medical narrative.
The Seventh-day Adventist Church's Loma Linda as the third Blue Zone. So Loma Linda, and then he and Michel Puller and Giovanni Pes went on to discover Aria in Greece and then Nicoya in Costa Rica. But I'm going to come back to Loma Linda. We're going to jump straight to Ikaria. You know, 8,000 people live on Ikaria and 35,000 goats.
I love this theme that's running through these stories.
Thank you. I love it too. People looked after goats. In Ikaria, they actually, this is before 2000, this is going back. So again, they were so isolated. They were so small. It was rocky. It was hilly. They actually had pigs. The Spanish had invaded everywhere and they'd left pigs behind. Mm-hmm. So we had pigs there as well. Don't think we didn't, but a lot of goats. And the reason they survived was because there were the perfect forests for them. So we think, oh gosh, pigs, they have no sweat glands. I told you I wanted to talk about pigs. I wanted it to be my little pet thing. How do we demonize pigs? You know, they've got no sweat glands. But if they're being raised in the highlands in Sardinia and in Okinawa and Nicoya, and Ikaria, they are living in forests and they are able to access acorns and nuts. Sure, they eat other foods as well, but they can cool themselves down by being in these forests. They don't need to roll in mud and excrement because they don't get too hot. They're in these environments that sustain them, which is very, very different to this whole concept of, oh, pigs dirty. But anyway, if they're brought up in their natural habitat, they're not. So we've got Icarians who also eat pig and drink a lot. They make a lot of cheese. But the issue, the thing with Icaria, and Dan Butner really stressed that Icaria was plant-based, plant-based, plant-based from his interviews with people. But the thing about Icaria is they're very devout Greek Orthodox people. And Greek Orthodox means fasting from 180 to 200 days a year. If you go and interview someone at the beginning of Lent for 40 days and you ask them what they're eating, don't be eating plants. But if you ask them what they're eating on the day they stop their fast, they're eating pig intestines wrapped around all that goat offal, cooked on a spit. They are eating, I just think it's really important to put into context. Yes, their diet would be very predominantly plant because of this religious fasting. So fasting doesn't mean no food at all. And I think that's a really important thing too. Through all of my delving into a lot of different religions, and the narrative changes over time. Mm. So Roman Catholicism used to be you could only eat after sunset. And then when people started working in factories, they couldn't make these people work all day and then not eat till after sunset. So times change and the rules, moral gymnastics, they move around a little bit because people can't die doing these religious rules. So yeah, so we go back to this Greek Orthodox. But what I think is really, really fascinating, and this isn't about pigs, but this is still going into part of where I'm going, is the fact that shellfish are blue-blooded animals. Did you know that? So in Greek Orthodox, it's only red blood, not warm blood like Roman Catholicism. It's red blood you can't eat. But
oh, I did not know that.
Okay, it's fascinating. And so they could eat shellfish because shellfish have got blue blood from hemocyanin instead of hemoglobin. Look, it just blows my mind. And you think, this makes so much sense. They're on a tiny island. Of course they can eat shellfish. This is how they have to sustain themselves. And Weston A. Price said vitamin A, D, and K2 were very high in shellfish.
Right.
They weren't allowed to eat normal fish because they had red blood. Yeah. But again, are these rules being made to allow the ecology to survive? It's like the Indigenous people in Australia. They had certain areas that they didn't hunt from because that was where they could reproduce safely and they could. It all just makes so much sense, Maddie. But there were animals there. And the plant-based one doesn't pass muster. But it's when you really look into it, you go, this is mind-blowing. Of course they make these rules. So then you go to Nicoya. And again, like Sardinia, the sea invasions were really nasty from everybody before the Spanish as well. But when the Spanish came, they, a bit like when the white man came to Australia, so many of the Indigenous people in Nicoya died from disease. They either died from the arrivals of the victors or disease. But the people who were left, they were enticed into the centre of Nicoya with gifts of lard to come and work on their farms, and they brought cattle. So the Nicoyans actually started to become cattle farmers. So they had real dairy. But again, lard was such an important thing because it was cheap. And so people who, you know, again, it provided so much for the community, the lard from the pigs. And you don't just kill a pig for the lard, you eat the pig.
So, yeah.
And then you pick Loma Linda as the fifth blue zone. I'll say it's the fifth because it just does not fit the criteria of any of the others. It was founded by Ellen G. White and populated by Seventh-day Adventists at the beginning. She bought a hotel and founded a sanitarium there. So they'd moved away from Battle Creek Sanitarium and moved over to California. So this is where Loma Linda is. Within 2 months, there was a nursing course being run and she'd founded the Loma Linda Bakery to start making the foods that John Harvey Kellogg had invented to take the place of flesh meat, eggs, milk and butter. So
the savior food.
But pork was demonized. Pork was unclean. in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. They follow the rules of Leviticus and Deuteronomy because they believe they are the spiritual children of Israel. So they're going back to follow those same laws. They don't follow all of them. They don't do all the slaughtering processes, obviously. And so it doesn't really make sense to just pick and choose parts, but this is how they've developed. And so you come to a place that's built on processed food, health food to take the place of flesh, meat, eggs, milk and butter.
Yeah.
Being developed to take that role. And so if you pull Loma Linda in to the blue zone, well, there's certainly no discussion of pigs or lard. I think it's the hashtags retreat from meat, which none of the others do, minimize dairy, like just don't even, just try not to even eat it and get rid of eggs. I mean, some of these countries, they lived off turtle eggs. I'm not talking just about chicken eggs. We're talking bird eggs and turtle eggs. And like our Indigenous Australians, you get so stuck on an egg is from a chicken. Well, an egg is an egg from any sort of bird or animal that lays an egg. So,
well, it's even interesting here in Australia, which you would probably be exposed to as well. It's like people, we eat cows, we eat sheep, we eat pork or pigs, but also available in our supermarkets here in Australia, which I eat regularly, is kangaroo, right? And so many people are like, oh, no, you can't eat kangaroo. And it's just, again, this belief that meat is only these three things, or chicken, we'd add in chicken.
Yeah.
It's only these four sources of meat and everything else is an animal.
Absolutely. And you think, it doesn't make sense. So,
no.
Yeah, I think going back to this ancestral thing, which I keep looking back to Western Day Price's work, ancestral foods heal and provide health and they resource us for the next generation.
Mm. Yeah.
What's being prescribed as the blue zone diet, this plant slant diet, is the Seventh-day Adventist diet. And what I'm finding is they are erasing the ancestral diets of these elders who have been held in their community as people who are wise and have provided information all down through the generations of how to look after animals, how to raise a kitchen garden, how to gather herbs and different foods. But in particular, they've been a very close-knit community through families. And this is another thing with Loma Linda. I mean, now they've got the Loma Linda University Hospital. It's like multi, like 14 levels high. It's massive. This is Loma Linda. Like this is health, wellness, food industry, education. They said 97% of the students who go through school in Loma Linda go on to further education. I can't see anything that's overlapping with our beautiful ancestral communities. Like, where did they go?
Well, and at the risk of sounding sort of naive in my comment, it's like if this is a true blue zone in according to the current narrative, why do we need a hospital at all?
Not just a hospital, but a massive hospital. And
yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to weave in a little bit longer. How much more time got? We're going to weave.
Oh, that's all right, go for it.
We're going to weave in a bit more. So, okay, Loma Linda. Dan Butner's sort of been saying, oh, Loma Linda wasn't really meant to be part of it. National Geographic really wanted an American one. So we put it in there, but, you know, I'm not sure it's a religious community. Again, these are people who've come, very few people, it's the oldest olds in Loma Linda, and this is where I'm discussing the oldest olds in each of these places. They've gone there to retire because they're affluent, educated. Mm. They may have worked at the hospital, but not all their generations of family are with them.
Yeah.
Okay, so it just, the whole mentality has just changed so significantly. And then a little truth bomb, the Seventh-day Adventist Church bought the Blue Zones project in 2020.
Loving what you're hearing? Make sure you're subscribed here on your favorite podcast app. Or there's even more waiting for you over on YouTube. On our channel, you'll get to see our fascinating guests demonstrate their techniques in real time. You'll see my animated explanation of complex health concepts made simple, plus all of those you had to be there moments that we mentioned in the show. The Coaching with Maddie episodes will be there too. We're also creating exclusive YouTube shorts. Quick, powerful health tips you won't find anywhere else. And let's face it, if we're going to be doom scrolling, which we all do from time to time, you might as well make it worthwhile. Just search How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast on YouTube and hit subscribe to unlock the visual side of becoming a healthy friend of the show. Because sometimes you need to see it to believe it and also to achieve it. The direct link is in the show notes below. Come and join our YouTube community. What do you mean they bought the project?
They bought the rights to do these city makeovers. So back in...
So they own the brand?
They own the brand. They own the brand.
See, the reason I wanted to just double down on that is because I want people to understand that Blue Zone is a brand now.
Yes, okay. It was a brand. Yeah. They branded it in 2009, Dan Buettner, Michelle Pooler and Giovanni Pez, and they started these Blue Zone city makeovers. And I say all the time, my daughter is a change management consultant. They write a template and they tweak it to fit different businesses that they're going to help change and manage different things. But there is a template. I found a document in 2018, this is before the church owned it, in 2018, saying one community who wanted to get Blue Zone accreditation, and that's where they go in and they say, look, you need more bike paths, you need walking, safe walking things, but you also need to make sure the school takes meat out of their diet, and you need to make sure there's enough restaurants that don't serve meat, and you need to make sure the grocery stores are having our nice plant-based meats front and center. All of these things they're suggesting to people, and some of them sound good, but some of them also I'm challenged by the dietary requirements. But do you know, one of the documents said it was $6.5 million US to become Blue Zone accredited.
Wow. And it's not cheap.
It's not cheap. And then you have to keep paying for accreditation every year. And some of the cities I've seen have dropped their accreditation because they just said, we can put this money to other things. Like, we've got these things in place, but we don't need to keep being it. But now that the church have bought it, the year after they bought it, 1,400 mayors signed up at the 89th US Congress of Mayors 2021 to become Blue Zone accredited cities. Mm-hmm. How much money is that for the church? Now, here in Australia, here in Australia, they pay no tax on any goods or services that they sell. And they don't just sell food. And Aussie kids are Weet-Bix kids. I found a slide the other day. Aussie kids are, and then the box of Weet-Bix kids, and underneath the hashtag was feed the belief. That's
literally
scary.
Talk about mind control.
So we're talking about a windfall. It's almost beyond imagining. So they've said, why stick to our core thing of health when we can, when wellness is such a commodity? Going into this wellness space, and they've been running it here. Sanitarium runs CHIP program, Vitality Works, Commonwealth Bank, they're their biggest customer, Vitality Works. It's owned by Sanitarium and they pay no tax on their wellness programs. And the actual CHIP program, which they run in hospitals and schools and through their own churches, I found a facilitator guide, and on page 15, it showed a graph of meat, eggs and dairy would give you the worst health outcomes. We recommend minimizing, but none at all is the best. Worst health outcomes. And it was above caffeine, tobacco, and alcohol. Oh, and processed food. And that's because they make processed food.
Yeah.
So, you know, this messaging is very, very strong, Matty. And I've found documentation in America where the plates that they show for adults and for children, not a single animal protein or fat on there. And this messaging is very confusing to the general public because they truly believe that this is health. We can be healthy if we don't eat any animal protein or fat whatsoever. But if you look at the Adventist health studies, which they tried to talk about Loma Linda and the longevity and all those sort of things from there, if you read the very, very fine print, which of course I have, you can be a vegetarian and eat meat, fish, and dairy once a week. And you can be vegan once a month eating those things. But that is not the messaging they give to the public. They don't have, oh, here's your 39, here's your all the days of the week, but on the fourth week, on this one day you can have a bit of meat and you'll still be considered a vegan, which if people haven't been eating that way their entire lives and they transition to that and they get rid of a lot of junk food, which people tend to do when they start to think about their health and whether they make the transition to being vegan or vegetarian or flexitarian or carnivore, whichever way they go, they tend to have made a decision to drop the shit stuff.
Yeah, and it's the honeymoon period of any diet, right, which is the detox of the toxic stuff.
But if you put a child on that when their brains are still developing, as you would know, this is your space. Children need healthy fats to make their brains develop. And this messaging is not coming through, I do not believe, and it's certainly not transparent as to why. So I heard Joanna McMillan, Susie Burrell, and Tim Crowe all talk about the blue zones. I think people are starting to challenge the Mediterranean diet. There's 21 countries in the Mediterranean, and they can go on and on about they wanted with olive oil, but I tell you, they don't eat it in Africa, and it's just, this is a utopia diet. Mm-hmm. Again, in Greece, where they fast for 180 to 200 days of the year, the Crete, the Mediterranean diet, it's just, it's come from there. But they don't look at the diet that they're eating for the rest of the time when they need to replenish, and that is probably plenty of vitamin B12 and the other essential fatty acids because they're allowed to eat seafood, allowed to eat shellfish.
Well, I mean, there's a big difference, as you well know, when it comes to our fat-soluble vitamins and fats themselves and our omegas. There's a big difference between a little bit of meat and none at all.
It is a big difference. And so my questioning is, now that we're starting to hear from prominent dietitians in Australia about the blue zones being the diet we should all be following, well, if you look at the blue zones, which diet are you telling us to follow? I've got four blue zones who eat the diet that I eat and one blue zone who makes processed food. Since the church have bought it, they've brought out, I think because a lot of their foods are highly processed, their alternative meat foods are highly processed. Mm-hmm. They've started to bring out their blue zone kitchen now, and it's, you can even get a Korean bowl, and I didn't know Korea was in the blue zone, but anyway, apparently you can get a Korean blue zone bowl, and they've started marketing all these health and wellness retreats. You can go to Thailand and learn how to be a blue zone and pay thousands of dollars and jump into your privately heated plunge pool and then have your biometrics taken. It's becoming socially engineered. It's becoming a space for the affluent. It's just another commercial marketing project, but this is the church owning it in America, and they're running it out through the cities. They've managed to convince Biden in the last administration with the White House. There's a group called the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, which was founded on the Loma Linda University campus, and they've got 20 sister organizations around the world now, and they're developing medical education based on the Adventist health reform message. So where does this all come from? The founder of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the prophetess Ellen G. White, believed that she had visions from God. She claimed over 2,000 visions and dreams in her lifetime. And she was told in 1863, when the church incorporated, that flesh meat defiled not only men but women and children, morally, physically, and spiritually. And she was told that the Garden of Eden diet in Genesis before sin, so fruits, nuts, and seeds, were the God-appointed diet for man, and we need to get back to that. And until we get back to that, Jesus is not going to come back, because why take flesh-lusting people to the Garden of Eden? It'll cause chaos and havoc if we're still wanting to eat meat. It's just a really interesting thing, and I think, again, when it becomes a belief about your salvation, this goes way beyond financial conflict of interest, and they don't have to acknowledge it in any of the research that they're doing. No conflict of interest. Wait a minute. You don't believe any animal proteins or fats should be eaten, and here you are. There was Joan Sabat was on the Dietary Guidelines Committee in the US determining caps on saturated fat, and I was, I don't think he should be there because this is a religious belief.
It's interesting you say that, because so that I was just in the right headspace, I'd watched a number of the episodes on Netflix before you and I had caught up.
Yes.
And I remember sort of yelling out to my partner, Yali, and being like, did you hear that? Because they'd said a study done by the Loma Linda University on Loma Lindans. And I was like, what? Like that's like number one conflict of interest.
Exactly. And they don't have to acknowledge it because they're not getting money. So the very first Adventist health study was by a guy called Mervyn Harding, and he went to the College of Medical Evangelists, which is what it was originally called in Loma Linda when they started the medical education in 1909. So again, they weren't training doctors in any of these other blue zones, but they were training them there to be medical evangelists. And the idea Ellen taught was that medical evangelism would be the entering wedge to the church. They were to use their health reform message because it would be a way of attracting people and gently bring them in. And let's not talk about God. Let's talk about health. Yeah. And they make comments all through. I've read so many of their magazines, so many books, so many ex-Adventist books. I live in that space. Gary goes, you're crazy. But it's, I do find it really fascinating. And they just talk about the fact that they can go into China where they couldn't if they were talking about God, but they can go in and say, we'll build a hospital. We'll provide a food industry in here. We'll bring this to you. We'll go to Japan and we'll have Sanuku foods and we'll do this. Like they own 26 food industries around the world, making foods to take the place of flesh, meat, eggs, milk and butter. And yes, so when you talk about Loma Linda, it's a huge conflict of interest in my mind because I'm being told, Gary got into trouble for suggesting that animal proteins and fats were healthy. And Ellen talks about the fact that if God's plan was for us to eat this original diet and God is the author of science, he founded the world, he made the world, he is the author of science, man's ideas of science cannot be raised above it because that's idolatry. So anyone that they're educating has to stay in this space. And she says over and over, you can't be translated if you're still eating meat. And translated is salvation.
I'm curious how long this is going to hold out. And what I mean by that is that at some point when you're a vegetarian, vegan, and you're devoid of enough fat or devoid of enough B12, at what point are the blue zones going to be the places that people live the shortest lives, right? Because at some point we're going to see the consequence. And you could argue, which it's is, already I think happening. We talked a lot about it. Yeah, we talked about it a lot on episode 207 with sanitarium and cereal and stuff like that. The USA is the embodiment of the failing human body as a result of these plant-based ideas.
And unfortunately, all of the blue zones that they originally talked about in 2005, 2006, right through to 2007, I think, was the last one, Nicoya. Western food's getting there. They've created a tourist destination. The oldest olds aren't there. People go now and they want all this plant-based food. And so even the islands, like Ikaria, is really struggling to maintain their traditional things because they're so busy looking after tourists on the beach who want to know about the blue zone and how to go to a place where you don't die. I think this is why they're having to have all these other places. You can go to Thailand now because it's hard to go to Ikaria and learn how to live. Like the part, I think I read a journalist had gone to Ikaria and went specifically off track to go and see one of these towns, and there's pictures of all these people who'd made it to over 100 and it was pretty much deserted. And in one of the cafes, you could eat meat, and she was devastated, this journalist, because she'd gone there to eat plants. And then she said there was a pinball machine and a young kid playing pinball machine, but there was nobody else really there except for the cook, and then they had to eat meat, so she just left. So I think what they've done also is potentially create real issues for some of these communities.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no surprise that the Western world has gone and corrupted something good.
And taken all this bad food with them, processed food. Oh, my head's exploding at the moment with some of the things I've been reading. I'm in the process of writing a book. I think I might actually get it done. And just going into all this space, I just keep saying to Gary, there's so much. And as I say, I've delved into a lot of places over the last 10 years, but the blue zones is the one that's been able to spark and bring together all of the information. I just think it's made me really question it and made me go, I have to keep talking about this, because now in America, you've got the blue zones being sold, and do people realize, do that 1,400 mayors understand they were buying into an ideology and going to put this out as health and wellness for their communities. It's really challenging, Maddie.
Yeah,
I worry about your baby and I worry about my grandchildren and I want them to grow healthy. I want them to help grow healthy brains and healthy bodies. And
yeah, well, I mean, we've got a number of textbooks here, and one of them in particular, which has got about 1,000 references in it, is called Milk to Meat. So little Gabriel is probably going to have kangaroo or venison or something in his hand, or butter in his hand and in his mouth first before carbohydrates. We're aiming for 1,000 days sugar-free, like first 1,000 days of life. So yeah, hopefully he'll probably have a giant head because his brain's so full of fat compared to the shrinking head size of everybody else.
But isn't it fascinating, you know, Weston A. Price, just seeing these teeth? If anyone's interested, just Google Weston A. Price and have a look at the communities that he's studied of people who'd been eating processed food. He says white flour and white sugar in particular, and then these communities that had not had any access to it. And their jawlines are beautiful. We're all having orthodontics to try and make our jaws wider. And you go, this really starts to make sense. It really does.
Yeah.
We're not chewing. We're not biting things. We're not ripping at things. And we're eating food that is diminishing our jawlines. It just makes so much sense.
It's interesting you say that, because I bought this book, and for anybody who's just listening, it's called Beauty Potential, and it's by T. Carney Bowles. But it's about the use of our jaw with food. And the concept is we're actually all born beautiful and like attractive and symmetrical.
Yes.
It's that at a very young age, when our body and our skeleton is developing, we're not breathing correctly. And so it's primarily through our nose, and we're not eating, because we give children these days, we give them pureed sugar and sippy cups. And so they don't have the opportunity to continue the beauty that they were born with in symmetrical development and strength development through the muscles in their face. And so it's just interesting you mentioned that, and I've got this book sitting here on my desk.
Good on you, Maddie.
And you are trying to make my kid beautiful.
I've already heard some beautiful things about him, so I'm sure he will be very beautiful. But it's so important, and I think we have been brainwashed to fear saturated fat since 1977. And now with the blue zones, with the Mediterranean diet, with all these, 50 years later, we're being taught to fear animal protein. And when you look at the groups that are pushing this, and it's not just the Seventh-day Adventist Church, don't get me wrong, but they are very, very influential. But processed food industry, pharmaceutical industry, we are being geared towards, Gary says, 15-minute cities and feedlot people.
Well, so I'm curious. So something that I've sort of advocated for over the years on the podcast, and with a bit of a half-hearted effort, but is this idea of no longer using the word fat, right? Because protein and carbohydrate are biochemistry terms, and the word fat is kind of like slang for lipid.
Yes.
And so I've sort of suggested to people before that we actually stop using the word fat, because psychologically fat makes you fat, right?
Yes.
And then so it's got this likeness. Mm. And so I'm like, no, we should use the third biochemistry term, which is lipid, and leave the word fat for being obese or having a lot of fat on your body.
That's very clever, Matty. Very clever.
Yeah, so I think we should do that. But at the same time, I want to extend that to this blue zone idea, because how do we now differentiate the commercialization and profitability degree of the term blue zone versus these actual areas that have not just fantastic diets that include meat, but, you know, purpose and faith and community and all of these other aspects which seem to get mostly ignored? Like, what do we call them? Because if we keep calling them blue zones, they're just going to be part of this
ancestral.
This illusion.
We need to call them ancestral. Mm-hmm. If you call them ancestral, Loma Linda doesn't count. But what I do think, so I've been talking about how do you sell it, fearing saturated fat and all these other things. But if they're honest, they've erased what really happened in these blue zones as well. We're talking about people who drank wine. Well, of course, since the church have bought it, Wine at Five is now Friends at Five. They're very anti-alcohol as well. But in Icaria, there's a fungi in Icaria when they're fermenting their wine that they can make it 18%. It's the highest you can make in the world. Like normally you can't get beyond 14. So they can make 18% wine. And I read this gorgeous article by this guy who said, well, of course, if we start drinking at 10 in the morning, we always water it down in the months that don't have an R in them. May, June, July, and August, because that's summer. Obviously, if they drink 18%, they're gone. They're not doing anything for the day. We don't recognize that these people as part of their culture. I'm not saying they're getting out and getting off their faces. They're obviously very used to this very high strength alcohol, and their children are brought up as part of their celebration and whatever else. They drink a little bit. It's not like they have to wait till they're 18 and go out and drink. It's part of their culture. So in Ikara, they were drinking wine. Up to 3 glasses of 18% a day is 5 glasses of standard drink in America. No. They drink 1 or 2 a day. It's like, no, they don't. And Ikarian men, 95% of Ikarian men either had smoked when they surveyed them or had given up in the last year, or maybe had given up, but they could even just give up in the last year of serious smoking, which is a really bad public health messaging. And I don't smoke or drink. I drink maybe 5 times a year. So I'm not advocating as a public health message, but I'm saying we're taking this out of the public health messaging. We're not honoring these people and their entire lives and what they did and what they do. Again, you're trying to sell me an Ikarian utopia, and they drink a lot and smoke, and they don't sleep a lot. They sleep in the day. They catch up in the day, but they might party till 2 or 3 in the morning if it's a wedding or a cruise. It goes all night. Like, they're trying to, I guess, package up this thing that we can't see. The grass is always greener on the other side. How do we do this? And then let's package up what's happening in Loma Linda. But it's so different. And that just, I just have to celebrate these oldest olds to the lives that they actually lived. They sacrificed, they worked hard, they starved at different times in their lifetimes. And they got to a place in 2000 where they were happy and healthy. And unfortunately, they got picked on, they got found, and everything was written. But yeah, it isn't what really happened. And when you look at the struggles that they had, and now in my book, I'm writing where these things have gone beyond that with EU caps on all sorts of things. Like, it's way bigger than we can discuss here today, but it's really interesting. And then in 2019, I uncovered work by Saul Newman, who was an Australian academic, and he was challenging the birth certificates. And in Okinawa, just remember, 93% of their buildings were destroyed. They lost every birth, marriage, death certificate that existed in Okinawa. And if you think about, they've got very, very good social security. And so if you were 60, you could get the pension. You've lost nearly everything in your life. You look pretty old. 40, 45, or I could be 60 because I've lost everything and the government will give me a pension. And Saul Newman says, the awkward thing is in 2010, there's a ton of people who are 115, which is slightly awkward. Sure, they're 90, 95, it's still old, but they're not 110, 115. And when they went through and worked out in Greece, in Japan, there was 238,000 people who were actually dead, were still receiving a pension. This isn't all the people who potentially got their older brother, older sister, or parent, or created documentation to suddenly say they were. I think in Japan, you handwrite your own. It wasn't a government regulated one, but it's happened in all of the blue zones. They all discovered that there are a lot of people who weren't as old as they were. So I call them oldest olds because that's fair. Mm. That's a fair conversation. And whether they were centenarians or super centenarians or not, they were still the oldest olds, and they were being looked at for their diet, and this diet has been erased.
It's funny you mention that, because I noticed watching these documentaries how many times the word "I'm about 88, I'm about 96, and it just registered really subtly, and I'm not intending to make something that maybe isn't there, but it's like I went off in my mind, this little alert of being like, about? What do you mean about? Like, this is so interesting. But oh my God, like you said, there's so much to unpack here, and you've done so much deep dive work, and you're writing a book, which is incredible. Mm. So for everybody listening that's just like, whoa, you've just blown my mind and I want more, where can everybody find you on the internet, in the world?
Oh, I haven't been on the internet a lot. I have my Belinda Fetke Facebook page. I think it's at the moment called Belinda Fecky Low Carb Healthy Fats. Could be anything. I change it occasionally. Yeah, so that's there. I occasionally write some articles on the I Support Gary website, but I'm working on a Belinda Fecky, taking it away from Gary. The reason I started I Support Gary was because I had to clear his name and I just wanted to keep putting up articles and keep putting up things to challenge the medical board and what was happening. But I'm working on this new one and I'm working on the book, so I'm a bit distracted. I'm about to go off to America and speak over there, which I'm really excited about, 2 hours down the road from Loma Linda, so wish me luck. I did visit last time I was there and I do have some friends who are ex-Adventists and even a couple of people I know who are still in the Adventist church who I've been communicating with. So I'm hoping to catch up with some of them when I'm over there, but it'll be...
Do you ever get branded like conspiracy theorist or any of that kind of stuff? Does that come your way?
No, I don't think it does. And I think because it came from, when Cyril Fabreki came after my husband, the mama bear came out. And I think because it's come from this place of going, why are you coming after my husband? Why are you silencing why are you destroying his medical career? I think because it came from that space. It wasn't like Gary.
A lioness.
Yeah, a lioness. A mama bear just going, don't you dare touch this man. He's a good man. Like he just... His heart is just here. And I think I told you last time, Maddie, when he first worked out about helping people with type 2 diabetes, okay, he was skipping down the hall and he's going, type 2 diabetes won't be here in a couple of years, Belinda. When I tell everyone how to get rid of it, when I tell people it can be reversed, when it can be prevented, it will be a thing of the past. And then as he kept talking and I was seeing going blue in the face, talking about the science, and this is the non-science, darling, no one's listening because it's the non-science that's stopping you. So I think, yeah, it's a powerful place, but no, I was actually contacted by a Seventh-day Adventist, a very, very high up early on, who asked me to change one of my articles. And we had a chat on the phone. He was lovely. And I think he wanted me to take the article down, but I said, no, I will respect you. And the thing that I wrote was a direct quote from a newspaper. It wasn't something I made up. It was a direct quote, but he'd obviously been offended by it being in a newspaper. So I took that out and I reposted it and we left it at that. So, but that's the only time. And I just think everything I've put up has been put up by the church. It's acknowledged by the church. They love what they do. Every single thing I've written about, talked about has been on the internet at some stage. I've gone into the Wayback Machine a lot. Thank goodness someone decided to start archiving or I would never have found a lot of this stuff. And with the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, they never changed their URL despite having hiccups with the Global Energy Balance Network. Everyone else went, change our URL, but the American College forgot to change theirs. So I kept being able to get so much information. So that's been fantastic. But I've noticed over time a lot of things that I've referenced have been dropped off or gone, or if people have not had that website anymore or taken things away, some of the things have been kept. But I can honestly say everything I put up is there. So it's not like, I mean, I'm putting pieces together. I'm doing jigsaw pieces. I'm finding things on my own because I'm like, that, say, with this 180 to 200 days of fasting a year, it's like, why can they eat shellfish? The Roman Catholics can't. Why can they? And so I just keep going, this doesn't make sense. So I deep dive and I've been able to uncover a lot because I'm so persistent.
It reminds me of a conversation I had with Charles Piller, who is an investigative journalist, particularly into the dementia Alzheimer's space. And he found basically that the original research that was referenced about those diseases, which is still used today, was photoshopped together. And I asked him a similar question. And he said, the best way to avoid that is to be right. And I think that you fall into a similar category of one, being eloquently spoken and not sounding like a sensationalist. And also, being right. That is one of the biggest defenses to the challenges that might come your way. So I think, you're super impressive and inspiring. And I can't wait until this book comes out. I can't wait to get my hands on it.
Thanks, Maddie. It'll blow your mind.
No worries. Yeah. And we'll get you back on here. We'll let everybody know about it. But to wrap up today's episode, and you can go anywhere you like with this, but with everything you know and all of the truth that you've found and the corruption you've discovered, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
Don't fear animal protein and fat. I just think that's the messaging we keep getting from the so-called experts. And if you look at ancestral diets, they did not fear animal protein and fat. Not a single one of them.
Amazing. I'm going to go and have a steak now. Well, thank you so much for being here. We've got to do it again soon, not make it 4 years between episodes. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
No worries. See ya.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.